It seemed to him for an instant that he saw an incongruous look on the worn, cynical faces of the newsmen, a look that was not quite respect, expectation, or hope, but more like an echo of these, like a faint reflection of the look they might have worn in their youth on hearing the name of Robert Stadler. In that instant, he felt an impulse which he would not acknowledge, the impulse to tell them that he knew nothing about today's event, that his power counted for less than theirs, that he had been brought here as a pawn in some confidence game, almost as a prisoner. Instead, he heard himself answering their questions in the smug, condescending tone of a man who shares all the secrets of the highest authorities. Yes, the State Science Institute is proud of its record of public service. The State Science Institute is not the tool of any private interests or personal greed. It is devoted to the welfare of mankind, to the good of humanity as a whole. Spouting like a dictaphone the sickening generalities he had heard from Dr. Ferris. He would not permit himself to know that what he felt was self-loathing. He identified the emotion, but not its object. It was loathing for the men around him, he thought. It was they who were forcing him to go through this shameful performance. What can you do, he thought, when you have to deal with people? The newsmen were making brief notes of his answers. Their faces now had the look of automatons acting out the routine of pretending that they were hearing news in the empty utterances of another automaton. Dr. Stadler, asked one of them, pointing at the building on the knoll, is it true that you consider Project X the greatest achievement of the State Science Institute? There was a dead drop of silence. Project X, said Dr. Stadler. He knew that something was ominously wrong in the tone of his voice, because he saw the heads of the newsmen go up, as at the sound of an alarm. He saw them waiting, their pencils poised. For one instant, while he felt the muscles of his face cracking into the fraud of a smile, he felt a formless, an almost supernatural terror, as if he sensed again the silent working of some smooth machine, as if he were caught in it, part of it, and doing its irrevocable will. Project X, he said softly, in the mysterious tone of a conspirator. Well, gentlemen, the value and the motive of any achievement of the State Science Institute are not to be doubted, since it is a non-profit venture. Need I say more? He raised his head and noticed that Dr. Ferris had stood on the edge of the group through the whole of the interview. He wondered whether he imagined that the look on Dr. Ferris's face now seemed less tense and more impertinent. Two resplendent cars came shooting at full speed into the parking lot and stopped with a flourish of screeching brakes. The newsmen deserted him in the middle of a sentence and went running to meet the group alighting from the cars. Dr. Stadler turned to Ferris. What is Project X? He asked sternly. Dr. Ferris smiled in a manner of innocence and insolence together. A non-profit venture, he answered, and went running off to meet the newcomers. From the respectful whispers of the crowd, Dr. Stadler learned that the little man in a wilted linen suit who looked like a shyster, striding briskly in the center of the new group, was Mr. Thompson, the head of the state. Mr. Thompson was smiling, frowning, and barking answers to the newsmen. Dr. Ferris was weaving through the group with the grace of a cat rubbing against sundry legs. The group came closer, and he saw Ferris steering them in his direction. Mr. Thompson, said Dr. Ferris sonorously as they approached. May I present Dr. Robert Stadler? Dr. Stadler saw the little shyster's eyes studying him for the fraction of a second. The eyes had a touch of superstitious awe, as at the sight of a phenomenon from a mystical realm forever incomprehensible to Mr. Thompson. And they had the piercing, calculating shrewdness of a ward healer who feels certain that nothing is immune from his standards. A glance like the visual equivalent of the words, "What's your angle?" It's an honor, Doctor, an honor, I'm sure, said Mr. Thompson briskly, shaking his hand. He learned that the tall, stoop-shouldered man with a crew haircut was Mr. Wesley Mooch. He did not catch the names of the others whose hands he shook. As the group proceeded toward the official's grandstand, he was left with the burning sensation of a discovery he dared not face, the discovery that he had felt anxiously pleased by the little shyster's nod of approval. A party of young attendants, who looked like movie theater ushers, appeared from somewhere with handcarts of glittering objects, which they proceeded to distribute to the assembly. The objects were field glasses. Dr. Ferris took his place at the microphone of a public address system by the official's stand. At a signal from Wesley Mooch, his voice boomed suddenly over the prairie, an unctuous, fraudulently solemn voice, magnified by the microphone inventor's ingenuity into the sound and power of a giant.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The crowd was struck into silence, all heads jerking unanimously toward the graceful figure of Dr. Floyd Ferris.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been chosen in recognition of your distinguished public service and social loyalty to witness the unveiling of a scientific achievement of such tremendous importance, such staggering scope, such epoch-making possibilities, that up to this moment it has been known only to a very few, and only as Project X.
Dr. Stadler focused his field glasses on the only thing in sight, on the blotch of the distant farm. He saw that it was the deserted ruin of a farmhouse, which had obviously been abandoned years ago. The light of the sky showed through the naked ribs of the roof, and jagged bits of glass framed the darkness of empty windows. He saw a sagging barn, the rusted tower of a water wheel, and the remnant of a tractor lying upturned, with its treads in the air. Dr. Ferris was talking about the crusaders of science and about the years of selfless devotion, unremitting toil and persevering research that had gone into Project X. It was odd, thought Dr. Stadler, studying the ruins of the farm, that there should be a herd of goats in the midst of such desolation. There were six or seven of them, some drowsing, some munching lethargically at whatever grass they could find among the sun-scorched weeds.
Project X, Dr. Ferris was saying, was devoted to some special research in the field of sound. The science of sound has astonishing aspects, which laymen would scarcely suspect.
Some 50 feet away from the farmhouse, Dr. Stadler saw a structure obviously new and of no possible purpose whatever. It looked like a few spans of a steel trestle rising into empty space, supporting nothing, leading nowhere. Dr. Ferris was now talking about the nature of sound vibrations. Dr. Stadler aimed his field glasses at the horizon beyond the farm. But there was nothing else to be seen for dozens of miles. The sudden straining motion of one of the goats brought his eyes back to the herd. He noticed that the goats were chained to stakes driven at intervals into the ground.
And it was discovered, said Dr. Ferris, that there are certain frequencies of sound vibration which no structure, organic or inorganic, can withstand.
Dr. Stadler noticed a silvery spot bouncing over the weeds among the herd. It was a kid that had not been chained. It kept leaping and weaving about its mother.
The sound ray is controlled by a panel inside the giant underground laboratory, said Dr. Ferris, pointing at the building on the knoll. That panel is known to us affectionately as the xylophone, because one must be darn careful to strike the right keys, or rather to pull the right levers. For this special occasion, an extension xylophone connected to the one inside has been erected here.
He pointed to the switchboard in front of the official stand, so that you may witness the entire operation and see the simplicity of the whole procedure. Dr. Stadler found pleasure in watching the kid, a soothing, reassuring kind of pleasure. The little creature seemed barely a week old. It looked like a ball of white fur with graceful long legs. It kept bounding in a manner of deliberate, gaily ferocious awkwardness. All four of its legs held stiff and straight. It seemed to be leaping at the sun rays, at the summer air, at the joy of discovering its own existence.
The sound ray is invisible, inaudible, and fully controllable in respect to target, direction, and range. Its first public test, which you are about to witness, has been set to cover a small sector, a mere 2 miles, in perfect safety, with all space cleared for 20 miles beyond. The present generating equipment in our laboratory is capable of producing rays to cover, through the outlets which you may observe under the dome, the entire countryside within a radius of 100 miles, a circle with a periphery extending from the shore of the Mississippi, roughly from the bridge of the Taggart Transcontinental Railroad, to Des Moines and Fort Dodge, Iowa, to Austin, Minnesota, to Woodman, Wisconsin, to Rock Island, Illinois. This is only a modest beginning. We possess the technical knowledge to build generators with a range of 200 and 300 miles. but due to the fact that we were unable to obtain in time a sufficient quantity of a highly heat-resistant metal, such as Reardon metal, we had to be satisfied with our present equipment and radius of control. In honor of our great executive, Mr. Thompson, under whose farsighted administration the State Science Institute was granted the funds without which Project X would not have been possible, this great invention will henceforth be known as the Thompson Harmonizer.